The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.
Trash is picked up by Bobby Berwood.
He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Here are your hosts, Richard Fleming and Connor McGahee.
Greetings and welcome to the Rapids podcast. We are on location in between PDL training and the first team training out here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. We're glad to have you along. Alongside Richard Fleming, I'm Connor McGahee. Been a very busy week in Colorado Rapids land. Denver to Atlanta, Atlanta to Dallas, Frisco, Plano, and then back to Denver just in time for the World Cup of Wine and Beer. Guys are now busy preparing for two home games over the holiday weekend, first against Houston Dynamo, followed by a date with defending champion Seattle Sounders. More on that to come. We will talk about a historic weekend in Indianapolis with this man, Chris Martinez, as he will join us live now here from the training fields at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Chris is just wandering over from breaking away. No, we'll talk to you, Chris. Yes. So, Chris, you're joining us on the podcast. What a huge week! And we've spoken over the last few weeks on the podcast. You know, just outside of that, does this kind of exceed the expectations from you guys? U16s, U18s through to the quarterfinals?
With our mindset and the work that we've put in, certainly not exceed. You know, I think, you know, hard work and preparation and the opportunity to compete and solve puzzles, like I like to say, was certainly in place. And, you know, get that first win and build the momentum and continue to push through the tournament. But, yeah, I couldn't be prouder of both groups.
You posted the video on the bus, right? And you just saw the pure joy of everybody involved. I mean, there's so much emotion, and I don't want to say relief at some point, but, I mean, you're happy for the kids, they're happy for each other. I mean, talk about how it felt in Indianapolis this past week.
No, it was a very rewarding moment, right, to say the least. Both groups getting through, obviously the 16s played the first match of the day on day three, and they qualified, they won their group, so they turned right around and sent us a lot of energy and positive vibes, hopefully for the 18s to figure out their match as well. And when we both got through and loaded that bus after a pretty significant rainstorm, yeah, guys were able to let loose and really enjoy the moment.
And it is kind of the first hurdle, because you've had a couple of days to settle back down. U16s now discover they've got to go to Dallas. The U18s have got to go to Orlando. Preparation starts all over again.
Oh, it started the very next morning. We enjoyed that evening, and we talked about taking care of our bodies, doing all the right stuff, the rehydration, rolling out ice baths, and proper preparation for what's to come.
Did you get a chance to look at, did you kind of scout as many teams, knowing that potentially one of these other sides in Indianapolis could be an opponent? Have you had a chance to look at Dallas and Orlando?
Absolutely. Now, leading in, our main focus was our opponents for Indianapolis, but since then, absolutely. A lot of games uploaded, downloaded, scouting reports, reaching out to contacts and whatnot we have throughout the country, and just try to get a clear picture painted of what we look to face and hopefully figure out.
And this has been historic for, you know, a lot of reasons. I mean, only 23 clubs nationwide had multiple teams make 16s and 18s, and you guys were one of them, and the trend continues. I mean, that probably doesn't matter to any of them, but maybe is there a sort of a feather in your cap in that regards to both make it to the tournament and then have both move on?
Oh, it's very rewarding. It's exciting. I think the guys have individually, collectively in both groups put the time, effort, and energy in, and now they're reaping the benefits. So I believe going into the knockout stage, ourselves, RSL, and Seattle are the only three clubs to put multiple teams into the quarterfinals. So certainly feel good about it, but there's work to do.
And there's talk of Orlando potentially bringing out their supporters group for that game. It's going to be played on the stadium field, Orlando City Stadium. I mean, the guys are going to have to get, they'll get a buzz out of that, I imagine.
Oh my gosh, amazing. The more the merrier, regardless if they're cheering for us, cheering for Orlando City. Just the environment and soaking it in, and pristine field, brand new stadium, couldn't ask for more.
And Dallas, and as yet, I think it's kind of undecided where that's going to be. But the guy showed that whether it's home field advantage, whether they go to Indianapolis, that kind of going away, playing outside of your comfort zone, shouldn't faze these guys.
Actually, you know, the ability to be together as a team and outside distractions don't creep in, and where they're in the hotel and have the meeting rooms and time together, I really think it pulls the guys together tighter and you know, as one unit, and can be very valuable, actually.
What to you is a target? What to you would be a... I mean, clearly both sides progressing to the semi-finals, but in terms of targets at the start of the year, and we spoke right at the beginning of kind of exceeding expectations, these guys just keep on pushing and pushing the envelope. As every game and every round and every stage of this tournament progresses, they seem to be just kind of embracing it.
Absolutely. Just rewind to this past August, and both groups, we really value goal setting, and on every goal sheet of every player, making the playoffs was the main goal. So obviously we accomplished that, and the next goal set in, and can we go to Indianapolis and make some noise? And obviously we were able to figure that as well. So now we're on to the quarterfinals, and you know, 90 minutes, 80 minutes for the young boys, and get out there and embrace the moment, hopefully play some good soccer along the way and come out victorious.
Very good, Chris. Thanks for doing this, and good luck coming up. It'll be a blast. Enjoy it.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Thank
you.
Thanks,
Dallas.
There goes Chris Martinez, head of Rapids U16s and 18s trips to Orlando and Dallas.
Yeah, and just to let you know, the game for the U16s is in Dallas on July 6th, and then the U18s the following night on the 7th. So those games are coming up thick and fast. And then I think the championship games are in Carson, California. Mm-hmm. So after the quarterfinals, the final four teams go to Carson, California, right. And I think that's over the weekend of 12th, 13th, 14th.
Place where Chris Martinez went last year with a different club, Real Colorado, took 16 boys to the Final Four. Now he's switched here to the Colorado Rapids, looking to repeat that success for the second year in a row in Carson.
Yeah, so a week on from the quarterfinals, that'll be, what's that, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I think, of the following week. Mm. So yeah, look, you know, and it's been great that we've been able to get Brian Crookham, we've been able to get Chris Cartledge from, you know, following the Generation Adidas Cup, and Chris Martinez has been talking to us off and on over the last few weeks and the last few podcasts, and to keep in touch with these guys and to see the progress. And to see the kind of quiet pride in Chris's eyes. I mean, to be fair, he's wearing sunglasses, but
right.
You could kind of see behind.
Tell,
you could tell that there is that quiet fatherly pride, and you know, it's unfinished business. They still, and I think him from a coaching standpoint, as you say, he went there last year, and from the Rapids as well, they got to this stage and didn't kick on. So this is huge, and you know, don't underestimate the U16s and the U18s making the playoffs. And then just one team going through from each group of four, the group winners, that was a big ask. And they did it in style, a 4-1 win and a 5-0 win for the U16s and U18s respectively. So some good performances, but these are going to be too tough. Dallas, as we know, I've got a wonderful development academy. Orlando City, you know, I imagine that there's money being ploughed into that. So these are going to be two tough tests. But, you know, as the Rapids have shown with a number of these U18 players as well, moving on into the PDL, these are guys that are going to relish this opportunity coming up in the next few days.
So we move from the Development Academy into the first team. Rapids, two games this week in two different types of competition. Not a great week for the Rapids. Three defeats in a row, starting with the home loss to LA Galaxy before falling in Atlanta and then tumbling out of the Open Cup for the second year in a row Tuesday in Dallas. First, Richard, let's talk about Atlanta. Very hot, very humid, and it was a wonderful atmosphere, not a wonderful result though for the Rapids.
And I think we spoke about it recently, didn't we? You know, you look at the games that the Rapids have played over the last few weeks, and even those that they've won. You know, you look at Columbus, you look at Oklahoma City, you look at Portland. Games where the Rapids had not so good first halves, and they were forced to kind of come out of their shell second half, turn those games around. You look at LA, a good first half, fell a little bit flat second half. And I think it was the same with Atlanta. It was a first half where the Rapids kind of held their own, had maybe arguably the better of the chances. And then second half, Atlanta, and I think to be fair, Atlanta being the highest scoring side in the league, 32 goals going into that game, they probably went in at half time and thought, well, we've got to change it up, because this is a side in Colorado that's come in and they have been the better side, or they certainly stifled us in the first half. And so that's what Atlanta did. Atlanta changed things up. They were much more aggressive, much more positive in the second half.
Well, and when you have $30 million worth of attacking power up front, something's going to get
and
at
of course,
point.
Of course
as
that helps.
Tim Howard said after.
Of course that helps, but I think where the Rapids kind of struggled is that the expectation of a backlash, the expectation of this is an Atlanta side that's going to come and have a go at us second half. So how do we go and change it up? I think where the Rapids kind of may look back is that they failed to switch it up second half, or it gave that appearance that they kind of failed to switch it up second half. Atlanta came out, changed their game, changed their approach, and asked questions of the Rapids, which clearly on Saturday that they were camped in their own half and certainly camped in their final third for long periods in that second half, struggled for an outlet. And so it was that which I think against Atlanta was a bit of a problem. And obviously, you know, Mike DeFont, he'll look back on that and he'll learn. He misjudged that defensively. He was caught ball watching, I think, and obviously giving Atlanta the chance to get the goal that would ultimately win them the 3 points. So it's tough because that's now 0-7-0 on the road in the league. Then they go to Dallas on Tuesday, and look, what could go wrong? Absolutely went wrong on Tuesday in that Open Cup game.
Absolutely, and you thought it probably couldn't get any worse. You had Open Cup coming a couple nights later in Dallas. Rapids finished with 9 men. They used 2 of their subs in the first 35 minutes because of injuries to Axel Schuberg and Dylan Powers. Third sub was used at halftime. Michael Azira came on for Nana Boateng, and then Shkelton Gashi had to leave. Just he couldn't go any further with his calf. And then, of course, Courtney Ford sent off. So things started to go downhill pretty quickly. Ended up to be a 3-1 win for FC Dallas on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was the worst-case scenario. When you're going into a game like that, any game, your priority is to win. In a cup competition like that, you know, sometimes you don't. If you win some, you lose some. If you don't win, then your kind of next priority is to come out of it unscathed. The Rapids lost, and they picked up 3 injuries, and they had a player sent off. So, you know, even the last few minutes when Gashi went off, there's more exertion on the body. The game plan went out of the window. I know that certain players were going to be playing a certain length of time to give them minutes, and then they were going to be subbed out. That, of course, went out of the window when players came out injured. If your cup is half full, you can say, right, OK, we're out of the cup. We now concentrate on the league. But you know, winning, of course, gives you confidence. It builds momentum and progress in any competition. So it's kind of the cliched response is that, well, now our focus is on the league. But not only just, you know, going out of the competition, but the fact they lost players to injury as well. And obviously we're not medical men. But if you're looking at hamstrings, then obviously Schuberg's had hamstring issues this season. You know, the issue with Gashi, if it's another lower leg injury, you know, he's had Achilles, he's had hamstring. So you would hope that it's an isolated incident. It's not something that we need to be concerned about potentially being more of a long-term issue. You know, looking a little bit further ahead to the games coming up, I think the Rapids will be fancying their chances, but it's now getting a little threadbare, this roster, get into that break, patch up the players, and then that next game is against Toronto, at Toronto on the 22nd of July. Maybe some new bodies coming in, some new faces with the transfer window opening, but these are two huge games and maybe even season defining.
You have looked into the future, and we will do just that after we've looked into the past and take a quick break. We'll talk to Glenn Davis of Houston Dynamo's broadcast next on the Rapids podcast. We'll be right back.
Near post, looking for Doyle! He's back! And he's back with a bang!
The Colorado Rapids take on Houston Dynamo on July 1st, presented by Transamerica.
Heston trying to call one! Marlon Heston!
Head to the stadium early and enjoy a live pregame concert by local Denver band AMSI and drink specials at 1876. Be sure to stick around after the match to watch post-game fireworks from the field. For tickets, go to ColoradoRapids.com.
Welcome back to the Rapids podcast, presented by Advocare. Time to check out our first guest, or second guest of the pod, I guess you could say, with Glenn Davis, who is the longtime voice of Major League Soccer, play-by-play veteran for the Houston Dynamo. Glenn Davis has been in conversation with you, Richard Fleming.
Delighted to say we're joined by Glenn Davis. Glenn, I don't want to put an age on you, but you've been around the league for a while.
Well, it's unfortunate, but yeah, the age does roll on. Yeah, it was actually cutting my teeth as a broadcaster, as an analyst in '96. With the Dallas Burn, which is now FC Dallas. So it's been a remarkable sort of lens to look through watching the growth of the league. And obviously I switched into the play-by-play role. So that's after beating around a number of professional leagues that came and went in the 80s. So, but it's been a remarkable run, and it's been amazing just to watch this growth.
I remember looking at the anniversary, the 20th anniversary video of the Rapids' first home game, and you were the colour analyst. You were at Mile High as part of that historic game for the Rapids against Dallas Byrne.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a lot of great moments at Mile High to be a part of the early Rapids and the numbering of different players there and the Chris Henderson overhead bicycle kick. Yeah, just amazing memories. It's nice that you brought that back because my mind just went back to Mile High Stadium and, you know, where the league was at that point and how much ambition there was and excitement from everybody to see, you know, where the reformation of a new professional league would go at that point. So, yeah, great memories.
We'll talk about the Rapids against Houston, you know, in a while. But I've got you on. I'm always intrigued as to, and I talked to Marcelo Balboa quite a lot about this. And in the early days, there was a sense that this league wasn't going to last very long, maybe 2, 3, 4 seasons. And then, of course, Miami and Tampa went. It's been nothing short of a minor miracle, hasn't it, where the league is now?
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously we had Philip Anschutz, you know, handling and floating a number of the teams. So, yeah, I think I remember right around 2000, maybe, was it, when there was some real talk of you know, there's a possibility this isn't going to work. And, you know, you can only imagine if it had not worked where the sport could potentially be at this point and what the dynamics would have been. But, you know, there was a rebirth. And obviously we've come to this point, and I think a lot of it was just about survival back then. And you'll hear some stories from players and what they were paid and some of the things they had to do to survive. And you know, it would probably liken back to the days that I played in the 80s. So, you know, it's just a good reminder to once in a while look back. I don't think you rely on the past too much, but you certainly remember it, honor it, and you remember how you got to where you are.
Do you look back, as you know, you've mentioned there, but is there a point in history around that time when the league kind of came to a fork in the road? It could have gone under, or it took the other path and blossomed. And was there one kind of overriding factor that, well, I mean, for want of a better phrase, save the league, save the sport, maybe?
Yeah, again, I think it's around 2000, and I'm not sure if that's the exact year, but it was in and around those years where I think at one point, you know, if you're a fan or you're a media member, or you're anybody looking at a league that, hey, by the way, one of the owners has like 5 or 6 of the teams, and it might even have been more, and he's keeping the league alive, you might be saying, hey, you know, we may be on very thin ice here. So I think that's when the fork in the road occurred. And then all of a sudden, you know, Philip Anschutz was able to divest himself of these teams. They encouraged other people to get involved and invest. And, you know, you probably regained some stability. You began to spit shine the product and improve it slowly in many different ways. I think as much as we criticize MLS, and everybody's pretty quick to do that, it's also done some pretty amazing things, and some people have done some really amazing work in order to help it survive. Are there things that you always want to get better? I'm sure. And I hope that attitude remains, and I hope the media continues to hold the league and themselves and teams and players and organizations to the fire, because that's the only way to help it continue to get stronger and grow is through healthy pressure.
And listening to people like you, it's easy to forget. And fans that have maybe only been involved in the last 5, maybe 10 years, and they see these wonderful stadiums and they see the international players coming in and the big name players and the development academies improving, it's kind of easy to forget, or maybe you weren't even part of that struggle back in the day to see how far this sport has come.
Yeah, I agree with you, Richard. And I think the other thing is, I mean, I would even think players, you know, I mean, a lot of these players now are used to good facilities, you know, as youth players. So it's a whole different world for them. And, you know, they may not be paying a whole lot of attention to what occurred in the past just because they're young. And you would understand that, I think. But, you know, to look back and to see where things have come from is, number one, a sign that you're getting older. And number two, it's something that I think you do need to do sometimes, but you also can't just think past all the time. You do have to be progressive, and you do got to go forward, and you do have to come up with new ideas. But to know where you came from is important.
Well, let's look forward then and bring it bang up to the present. Houston Dynamo, if we're talking mysteries and puzzles, and why can't they win away and why can they not lose at home?
Yeah, pretty interesting. I think it's tough for them to recreate their attitude on the road. I don't know if it's a comfort with the players. I don't think I have the answer to that. You know, I've looked at maybe the attitude of the team and the energy of the team when they've gone on the road as opposed to home. Look, Wilmer Cabrera came in and basically said at the beginning of the year, look, we're going to become a good home team. We have to be in order to position ourselves to potentially make the playoffs. Now it's how do you win on the road? And I think, you know, player performance is maybe not as been as good on the road. You know, look, fate is a little bit of it. You do need a little bit of luck. You do need a goalkeeper one night to have a blinder and win your game. I think that's a prerequisite. But, yeah, I think it's just more about attitude and comfort on the road. And to Cabrera's credit, he's tried a lot of different things. I mean, he's set up different tactically, use of personnel. He's tried a number of different things. They've come close. They've definitely improved in their last couple of games, you know, from a team shape and defending standpoint. So I think they feel they're inching closer to that. And I think they feel that, you know what, with the injuries in Colorado this weekend, this is the day we do it.
Are there fans that have been surprised how quickly there's been that adjustment within the, bearing in mind they've missed out on the playoffs the last three seasons, how well they've started under the new head coach?
Yeah, I think it might be a bit of a surprise. But look, if you're really following the team and you watch the overhaul of the roster, and I think Wilmer Cabrera has a lot to do with this because of his contacts as well. You know, without mincing words here, they're just better players. The players are better. They're younger. They've now have overall team speed, which unfortunately some of that won't be there with Elise and Kyoto off with Honduras in the Gold Cup. But they improve the overall team's speed. They change the attitude and philosophy to be a more attacking, interesting team. You know, it was pretty rough here for a couple of years. It was like watching paint dry. And, you know, people might get mad at me for saying that, but I think we have to be truthful in order to move forward. And they've done a great job of revamping the roster and making it a more interesting product, an attack-oriented team at home. I'm not sure that's totally what you're going to see in Colorado. But, you know, to that standpoint, they, you know, when a business is ailing and struggling, you got to improve the product. And so far they've done that.
And obviously, you know, strikers, as we know, historically have thrived on confidence and most of them are confidence kind of driven. Was that the issue with Kubo Torres? I mean, here's a guy who'd not scored in the previous two stop-start seasons. He's got 11 so far and obviously, you know, looking to have his best season ever in Major League Soccer.
You know, Richard, I think we've broken this down every which way. Here's what I believe. I think there's accountability in a lot of areas. Number one, he came in with a, you know, with some serious allegations in Mexico off the field. So it wasn't a great start. But he himself has not had the supporting cast. He's a player that needs a supporting cast. So when you get two blazing Honduran wingers and you've got an emerging Mauro Menotas, you have guys that can penetrate around a center forward in an aggressive sort of a attacking setup at home, certainly, which gets him in and around the penalty area. And that's where he thrives. And, you know, these teams, you know, under Owen Coyle and even before that, they were set up sort of negatively. And how's Kubo Torres as a lone striker in a team that doesn't want to cross a halfway line going to do anything for you? I mean, I saw games last year where he never touched the ball, you know, but maybe twice in the attacking third of the field, and then he subbed off at halftime. And it's like he's not set up to succeed. The part that I think is accountable for Torres is fitness level. I think he came back in a lot fitter. I think he came in a lot more motivated. But he is definitely a center forward that has to have the right pieces around him in order to succeed.
And defensively, and we've talked all about the attacking side, defensively, is that an area that's also been tinkered with by Wilmer?
Yes, and I think it's that balance of attacking and defending. You know, on a team that doesn't have a natural playmaker and is somewhat direct at times, you know, that's kind of been the challenge for him. And I think he's definitely done a nice job of improving that. both at home. If you remember the opening games at home, they were just like somebody shot a cannon and everybody was up and down, and the Dynamo were outscoring people and creating a boatload of chances. They've probably pulled off that a little bit now, but by pulling off that, they have a better team shape now. They're better compact as a team without the ball, and I think they're better in transition. I think in transition they were a bit slow in thinking. They'd lose the ball and they'd get caught positionally and out of team shape, and that area has improved a lot. So, you know, it's a whole lot of new players, and I think the manager has to get a lot of credit for what's going on the field.
And I get a sense from talking to you that they'll see Saturday as a real chance to get that first win on the road.
Yeah, I would think so, based on, you know, their prior road games. We got a draw in Dallas. You know, I think they're going to have their challenges with personnel as the Rapids are. But they better be thinking like that, right? They're professional soccer players. I mean, don't you get sick and tired of hearing you haven't won a road game? That's kind of the way I look at it.
A reminder that the Rapids face the Dynamo on Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Kickoff is 7 p.m. and fireworks will follow the footy. Once again, we'll be right back.
The Colorado Rapids and Commerce City host Fourth Fest, the largest public fireworks show in the state. The Rapids take on Seattle Sounders FC on July 4th, presented by Westera Credit Union. Head to the stadium early to enjoy the pregame Fourth Fest Fan Festival with fun and activities for the whole family. Stick around after the game to enjoy the fireworks show following the final whistle, plus a live concert by country music star Russell Dickerson. For tickets, go to ColoradoRapids.com.
Welcome back to the Rapids Podcast. Next Tuesday, 4th of July game, as is tradition here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. The defending champions are in town, Richard Fleming. It's always one to circle on the calendar, whether Seattle comes here. So when Seattle comes on the 4th of July, it's a big one.
And it's the first time the Rapids will have faced them on 4th of July. Last year, I mean, it's a bit of a trend now with the Rapids hosting defending champions, defending MLS champions with Portland Timbers in 2016. That was a goalless draw. Tim Howard's debut is returned to Major League Soccer. Seattle will be missing a couple of players, certainly for Gold Cup. I mean, Houston will be as well, two Honduras players. But Seattle will be missing Jordan Morris and Christian Roldan with Gold Cup duty for them. And, you know, history for the 4th of July games, and there's been one game that was played on 3rd of July. All of the other games have been played 4th of July, and they've been here in Colorado. Colorado have hosted 4th Fest forever and a day. But you look at the record, and the Rapids, I think, are 13-3-5. All time on the games around the holiday weekend. So as I say, what is that? My math. That's 21. So 20 have been on the 4th. There's just the one that's been on the 3rd of July. But if you look at the games that have been played here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Rapids are 3-2-5 on Independence Day. So they've not got as convincing a record inside this arena with just three of those 10 games that have been won here on that historic day. But these are two games, as we said earlier, two games against Houston and Seattle, two teams in the Western Conference, two teams that you want to kind of keep in touch with, and two victories would take the Rapids to 22 points from 18 games, would take them into the break. They wouldn't break into the playoff places, but they'd be on the coattails, and then all of a sudden with games in hand that you've got, it would be a much rosier picture. Anything less than two wins, even if they pick up 4 points or 3 points or 2 points, that's going to make it very, very difficult. And I think history suggests the Rapids this weekend, 17th game, is against Houston Dynamo, so that's the midway point of the regular season. And I think history shows that only one team, and that was Seattle last year, that actually went on to win the entire thing. But prior to that, no team had been bottom of the standings at the halfway point and even made the playoffs. Seattle kind of bucked the trend and some.
Just a little bit.
Last year. So history would not favour the Rapids if they're still sitting bottom after the 17 game points. So 3 points against Houston. Let's start with that one. Get that one out of the way. Quick turnaround, regen, ice baths, you know, getting the muscles and hopefully getting a few of the injured bodies that may not make it Saturday. Get them ready for the Seattle game. Yes, like LA last week, there'll be a little maybe revenge at the back of the mouth following the defeat to them in the Western Conference Championship game. But, you know, in essence, that's gone. It's a new season. It's a new game. Same opposition. They want a different outcome next Tuesday. Big crowd expected. Yes, the fireworks. Lovely. Hopefully they're fireworks and explosions of celebration. And it's not kind of, as we said, and I think I used this phrase a few years ago, a damp squib. and the squib was a firework back in the 40s.
Right.
So,
which you know, people like squib, is that yes. related to some sort of aquatic creature, like a squid? It's a squib.
It was like a damp squib. So in other words, you don't want the fireworks right. to fizzle out. Yes. You know, you want to use that momentum, and certainly want to use the momentum from Saturday, take that into Tuesday, and then go into the break knowing that you've done all you can in the two home games before that.
Time now for
more important dates to remember.
It's the Cardell Homes Community Spotlight, where we tell you of events and initiatives involving the club like this one. The annual World Cup of Wine and Beer held here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park Wednesday night. All proceeds going towards Kroenke Sports Charities, one of the favorite events that we do all year long here at the Colorado Rapids. Parting shot. This part of the Rapids podcast brought to you by Lunasul Tequila, made using only the best ingredients and classic techniques. Lunasul Tequila, one sip and you know. Richard Fleming, what do you know?
I heard a gentleman talking to you on Wednesday at the World Cup of Wine and Beer, and he yes. kind of whispered to you, when this guy has a bit of a dig about referees, make sure you stand your ground. It was along those lines. He was wanting you to defend referees. Well, my parting shot this week is having another little dig at the referees. And for some, I think VAR...
Might be deserved.
VAR cannot come fast enough. Silvio Petriscu was the referee for the Rapids at Atlanta last weekend. Interestingly, and it might just be pure coincidence, he's without a game this weekend, so maybe that's some kind of acknowledgement of his performance and the performance of his team, his two assistants and the fourth official. Because, you know, don't get me wrong, much of what he and his team missed favoured the Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the Joshua Gap.
Yeah.
Two handballs, Josh Gatt,
Dennis
Castillo's tackle, which was R-rated.
Yeah.
I think Michael Azira was involved in something. Mike DeFont was in there as well. So even if you take maybe three or four big decisions that, as I say, favoured the Rapids, but three or four big decisions that should not be missed, and certainly the Joshua Gatt handball has to be picked up. And you had a kind of a theory in terms of what did you refer to as the referees?
It's called the coffin corner over there, because you don't have. Yes, it's within view of your fourth official as he's looking down the line, but you can't count on him. If he's dealing with something else on the bench side, then he may not be looking there at all times. If you're on the other side, in front of where the assistant is, that's a different story. You have an extra set of eyes on it. But in the coffin corner, yeah, referee is a lot of times railroaded. I mean, he's right behind, out of view of things that happen on that side, whether it's a touch out of bounds, whether it's a foul. And in this instance, Josh Gatt must have had his, even though his arm was very much extended, he had his arm in a spot that was very obvious handling, used the forearm to bring it down. But that is a massive blind spot for a referee on both sides of that diagonal.
So maybe an element of kind of benefit of the doubt. But as you say, the motion of Josh Gatt's arm, the fourth official, the two assistants and the referee, and there's 46,000 fans in the crowd. Most of them will have had a decent view, and obviously some of them will have been elevated. That was a massive miss. And had that gone in, there'd have been huge, huge repercussions, I imagine. And I think also what we also saw again last weekend, Connor, and this is something that we've kind of gone back over, is that there is this emphasis on the points of emphasis. And again,
from the Department of Redundancy.
Yes, but again, we saw chippy little fouls that ought to have been punished that then began to grow and grow and grow. And the referee then punishes the fifth, sixth or seventh. And I go back to what we said a few weeks ago, is just play the game. Ref the game. Ref the game as you see it. Don't feel obliged to kind of apply these points of emphasis, because if a foul in the first minute is worthy of a yellow card, don't wait for the fifth challenge after 32 minutes when the game's got out of hand. And I think we saw a little bit of that. And again, it was a game that didn't need to be chippy, and I think we saw more examples of that. And I'm not wanting to bash match officials. It is a very, very, very tough job. The Castillo challenge, the two handballs, as I say, Michael Azira, Mike DeFont, and that's just looking at it from a rapid standpoint. So video assistant referee goes live across MLS after the All-Star game, which is early in August.
Yeah.
And as I say, I think there's going to be a few referees that will be welcoming that and can't wait to see that come in, because, you know, events like we saw last Saturday, And it's due to the advent of television, more television cameras, the referees' errors are exposed even more, and we can't have the man in the middle's credibility and his authority being undermined, and I think it certainly was last weekend.
A reminder, there's footy and fireworks. I love sound effects. Coming your way over the next few days, starting with the home game with Houston Dynamo on Saturday before Seattle comes to town on Tuesday evening. Both of those are 7 p.m. kickoffs. Fireworks will follow both games as per usual.
What's up, Rapids fans? It's Russell Dickerson. Just want to let you know I'll be playing a special acoustic set after the Rapids Sounders soccer match following the fireworks on July 4th with 92.5 The Wolf. Get your tickets now before it sells out at coloradorapids.com.
Two home games. Rapids are desperate for two home wins. That'll take them into the Gold Cup break on a high and to within touching distance of the playoff places. However, you're spending your 4th of July, make sure it's a happy one and celebrate independence from Britain in style. Please, as always, be safe. Hope to see you at some point. Richard Fleming, I will see you wrapped in an American flag on the weekend, all right?
I've got a little special gift for you.
Lovely.
Yeah,
lovely.
You'll enjoy this.
I'm not going to wear a Union Jack underwear for the 17th time.
You will enjoy this.
Okay. You will all enjoy my suit for television coming up on Tuesday, too. I can promise you that. Until Saturday and until the 4th of July, thanks for listening to the Rapids Podcast, celebrating the birthday of America. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Rapids Podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.